Welcome all Wahoos and ACC sports fans. Crazy weekend in Charlottesville. Third home game in a row. And, you know, the Wahoos played with a lot of heart. They had a great game plan. Very impressed by their effort. However, despite the excellent offensive series that gave the Wahoos the lead with less than 2 minutes to go, they still led with 22 seconds approximately to go in the game. But at the end of the day, it was a loss. If there is a moral victory, I think the coaches were talking about that post game. What do you think, Javo?
Well, you know, I go to the quote in today's paper. I feel like we made strides today, but honestly, I'm tired of making strides and not winning. That was senior tailback Albert Reed. But I did think after as I was driving home on 64 the other day, I heard Coach Mendenhall basically say that if Louisville is indeed the fifth best team in the country and if Jackson is the leading candidate for the Heisman Trophy, then obviously Virginia is getting closer. You know, I mean, I think he really feels like, you know, it's a long-term project. The sad news is they were really, you know, within the grasp of getting a signature win over admittedly a very good football team. And it did. I know Bronco kind of brushed it off in the post-game press conference, the comparison to last year's Notre Dame game. Yeah. But it was same end of the field, just different ends, different sides of the end zone, but very, very similar play. But, you know, tough loss. You know, it's, you know, they played well, they fought. You know, to me, the key moment in the game, beyond the obvious ones at the end, was midway through the third quarter. You know, they led 10-7 at half. They scored, made it 17-7. Louisville comes out, tip ball. Blanding makes the interception, runs it down to the 15-yard line. And that's one of those moments, you know, I didn't play football, but I've watched a lot of it. And that's one of those moments, if you got the killer instinct, if you punch it in there and make it 24-7, then all of a sudden you're making it awfully tough for Louisville to come back. And then
it hurt even worse that the field goal kicker snap hooked the thing into left field.
And you and I have had this discussion before, and I, you know, again, I'm not a football guy, but after quarterback, I think the first guy I'd recruit is a place kicker because there are just too many moments where you got to have those points. You know, well, I mean, that's got to be a gimme kick for a college kid from 30 yards.
Well, let's talk about that real quickly. First off, there have been some injuries, and there's been some misfires in that department. A pretty decent field goal kicker graduated last year. Unfortunately, this year, with all the turmoil at that position, it has reared its ugly head. All right, tonight we have an awesome show. We have Tony Covington, former UVA defensive back. He used to wear number 5. Also, we've got Dr. Boyd Rawls with Ortho Virginia to help us with the injury report. And there is some injury news that we will be discussing that's late-breaking. And then later in the show, we have Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports Journal, and he's a radio personality extraordinaire down in the Carolinas and will give us some excellent insights as to football and basketball news from the rest of the conference. So without further ado, as some folks like to say, we've got Tony Covington, who's probably still steaming a little bit because the DBs played a pretty good game up until that last couple of passes by Lamar Jackson. Tony, welcome to Who's Talking.
Hey, man, how you guys doing?
We're good. We're good, Tony. Take us through that last play. What were you thinking up in the broadcast booth? The coverage looked pretty good. How did you feel about the way the game ended there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Juan Thornhill could not have covered him any better. I mean, when I went back and saw the replay, and then I looked at a still shot of it, I mean, he was in great position. He timed his leap perfectly. The ball just went over his fingertip by 2 inches max, and he even had his hand, you know, a bit of face guarding, had the left hand face guarded, and then the ball went right over his outstretched hand by a couple of inches. It was a perfect throw that beat perfect coverage.
Well, let's back up a little bit, and I agree with that analysis, of course. Tony, you have had the pleasure of covering these games now under the new regime, and what do you think of the team itself over the last few weeks? And is Virginia truly improving as most people seem to think, or is some of this fool's gold?
No, they're improving. I mean, I think the first couple of games, you know, Richmond in specific, that kind of caught us all off guard. But one thing I like about this staff is that they take it on the chin. They'll stand in and take it on the chin and say, you know what, I didn't know, you know, Coach Mendenhall was like, I didn't know my team after that first game. And then he started to really dig in and improve. And each week you saw them, even though the wins weren't stacking up, you saw steady improvement in a couple of areas. Then it'd be more improvement in the other areas. And then they were able to put it together to get a couple of back-to-back wins. Then, yeah, the bye week, you jump out, and it's just a great first half by the Cavaliers, and then an interception right before the half, and it seems like it sapped the team's momentum and energy for six straight quarters going into the Carolina game.
I agree.
So we saw the team regress there, which was very disconcerting, and then you didn't know what to expect for the Louisville game, and then to have the guys come out and play a great game, tremendous effort, and to have them lose on a last-second perfect pass by a Heisman frontrunner, you got to be happy with that, because they very well could have gone in the tank for the rest of the season. But they came out, strapped it up, fought like crazy, and I'm looking forward to watching these guys play this week at Wake.
You know, hours ago, the ACC announced that Micah Kizer was named the linebacker of the week in the conference. And, boy, he seemed to be everywhere. And not that he hadn't been everywhere all season. He's got over 90 tackles, and he's got like 5.5 sacks and a bunch of tackles for loss and some fumble recoveries and some pass deflections. I mean, did you see this coming from Micah Kizer? And is the sky the limit for him?
This guy is definitely the limit for that young man. You saw last year, even though it was a different scheme, he made a whole lot of plays. I think he led the ACC in tackles last year. And so you saw the potential there. But then this year, it seems like it's gone to another level, a different scheme, and it fits his game perfectly. The defense is set up for that Mike linebacker to make a lot of tackles. You know, he owes a lot of that to that up front line, because those guys are keeping him clean, so he's able to run, and he's such a smart, heady player. Oh, yeah, and by the way, he's got a really, really smart coach in Coach Bronco Mendenhall that is a mastermind when it comes to defense.
Well, one player I know that you keep your eye on all game long is probably Quinn Blanding, number three. Rumor has it, and Coach Mendenhall has commented on it, that he's not practicing but maybe one day a week, undisclosed injury, and yet he had like 12 tackles in the game, and, you know, he's everywhere. Although it seems to me he's having a hard time getting a burst from a standing start. He tends to pick up momentum, and then he gets to the sidelines and makes the plays or makes a break on the ball, but he doesn't have the explosion. And I wonder if he doesn't have like turf toe or a stressed arch or something like that. I mean, what do you know, and what are your comments about his play?
Yeah, I think it's just been a nagging injury. I remember coming down during summer ball, and he was on the exercise bike. You know, he was cheering, walking around, jogging very lightly. So I knew he wasn't at full strength. And, I mean, he quite honestly has been playing at about 65-75%, you know, for the first four games. Then we got to the bye week, got a little bit of rest in. Then you saw the Quinn, you know, flying around against Pittsburgh, and you really saw it this past game against Louisville, where it looked like the Quinn that's flying all over the field. So you got Micah Kizer flying on one end, and you got Quinn Bland flying on the other, and these guys are making a lot of tackles. But, you know, he hasn't been full strength this whole season.
We are visiting with former Wahoo and current UVA radio analyst Tony Covington. Tony, just to stick with the secondary, because I know that's your area of expertise, among others. But Talk a little bit about the youngsters playing in the secondary, but before you get to that, tell me, on Louisville's first series, they almost had a 95-yard touchdown play where a guy was running wide open down the middle of the field, and fortunately Jackson overthrew him. What happened on that play?
Yeah, just a busted coverage. I think the guy, they had four wides, and it just looked like the safety got his eyes in the backfield. There was no reroute by the outside linebacker. And so, you know, you got quick on a free release, which makes it tough on a safety. And then Lamar Jackson got loose. And I think also happened was when he started to scramble, guys, they lost sight of him. And so when he freed up, he was a wide open guy downfield, and thank goodness he airmailed him on that one, or they would have lit the scoreboard up for, you know, a 90-plus yard touchdown.
Yeah, and what about the some of the first year players back in the secondary? How are they performing?
I really like what I see. I think Bryce Hall is going to be a really, really special player. He's a long arms, tall kid. I'd like to see, you know, I think when he understands just how physical he can play and use those long arms of his, man, he will be an absolute monster. Thornhill, another long, rangy kid. You know, same thing with him. Probably runs a little bit better than Bryce. You know, a year older, but even though he's a first-time corner at this level, I think both of those guys are learning a lot. I think Chris Moore is going to be a really good player. Kareem Gibson brings a different type of game to the mix. Not necessarily the biggest player, but very quick, very heady, and is not afraid to stick his nose in there. So I like what I'm seeing by this youth movement in the secondary. And I think, you know, with some of the guys that they have coming in the 2017 class, the future is very bright for Coach Howell in that secondary.
What about Wake Forest? Go on, look ahead to Wake Forest. I'm sure you've kind of scouted them a little bit. What should we expect this weekend down in Winston-Salem?
Well, I think you're going to see a really well-coached Wake Forest team. Defensively, they are really, really tough. They've got a mobile quarterback, and you know, just it's been a mix. You know, he started out running it well, struggled a little bit with the pass, and so I think what Virginia has to do is to make him one-dimensional, make him take away his strength, which is, I believe, running the ball, and force him to become a passer. And then allow that front to be able to get after him. And I think they will challenge Virginia with that strong defense. But Virginia has got to be able to show consistently that they will run the ball, because Mizell is really doing a great job of running hard and making guys miss in the hole. I tell you, I'd really love to see him actually get a little bit of blocking where he can actually explode through the hole and not have to make a great move just to get back to the line of scrimmage. So if Virginia can do that, I think Kurt Binker will have an opportunity to light that secondary up with a nice mix of running pass.
That's exciting. All right, Tony, harken back to your days at UVA. Who are some of the guys that you played with that you still stay in contact with? And do you have a favorite moment as a Cavalier athlete?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, I talked to a lot of the guys from back in the day. It was great to see Matt Blunden this past weekend. And I talked to Sean Moore fairly regularly. Derek Boyd was my first year roommate. And, you know, Paul Collins. Yeah, I talked to a lot of the guys, man, from back in the day. Ray Savage, Kirby, Slade. And so, you know, it was a great group of guys. And, you know, probably one of my favorite moments is the win over Clemson that year. You know, I would say that, and then getting that number one ranking and holding on to that for a few weeks.
Yeah, and it was probably nice for you and your colleagues to see Coach Welsh honored during the game on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome, man. Best coach I've ever had, you know, college or pro.
Now, did you ever cause him to throw his hat?
Of course I did.
Hey, you know, before we let you go, we want to also acknowledge the fact that you were a fourth-round draft pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I had a chance to revisit some of your background history, both for the Wahoos and the Bucs, and I know for a time there you were riding high, weren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the pro game was it afforded me to do things for my kid, for my family at a young age, and it was awesome. It was an awesome experience, you know, to be considered one of the best athletes in the world playing on that stage. But at the end of it, I just love playing football. You know, we could play in the street, in a phone booth. It didn't matter. You know, I love the physicality of the game, and football will always be my first love.
Well, listen, we want to sign off on that with you today, and thank you for joining us tonight on Who's Talking.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Tony. All right, we're going to head to break. On the other side, we got Dr. Boyd Rawls and a little discussion about the injury report. And stay with us later. We've got Dave Glenn of the ACC Sports Journal and Dave Glenn Radio. Thank you.